March panel for the Court of Appeals. Yesterday we had the privilege of sitting in Norfolk. Always nice to travel to the northeast of our state. Today we have three cases on our panel. Everything is being recorded, both audio and video. So if you have any sensitive material, children's names, anything of that nature, you might want to keep that in mind. It's live streamed so people can watch it live, and they can also go back and check the archives. So with that, I will announce each case name twice for purposes of recording. And with that, to my right this morning is Judge Mike Pirtle from Omaha, and to my left is Judge Rhett Inbody from Wahoo, and I am Francie Reedman. So with that, we'll get started. Our first case of the day is State versus Sen. State versus Sen. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning. Good morning.
Keith Kolasch for the appellant, Joseph Sen. May it please the court. On June 9, 2015, Joseph Sen Jr. was convicted by a jury in Richardson County District Court of carrying a concealed weapon. It's the appellant's assertion that the evidence that was presented at trial did not satisfy all the elements that were required for a beyond reasonable doubt for a conviction under Section 28-1202. That statute requires the state to prove that the weapon was concealed on or about the appellant's person, and we don't believe that the evidence presented at trial met that burden. The relevant evidence that was presented at trial concerning carrying a concealed weapon consists mostly of the testimony of Deputy Frederick of the Richardson County Sheriff's Office. He was an officer that searched the U-Haul that Mr. Sen was driving when he was stopped and during his detention. Deputy Frederick testified that the handgun was found in a hard-sided case behind the passenger seat of the vehicle next to the passenger door of the U-Haul that Mr. Sen was driving.
Mr. Kolasch, what's the test that we're using? Is it enough that the gun is in the cab of the vehicle? Does it need to be within his reach? What's the legal test that we're applying here?
Your Honor, from the research that I've done, Nebraska doesn't necessarily have a good definition for that. So I've looked outside the state to see what other jurisdictions have used. The ones that I've found have generally used a test that weapon has to be within the reach or the control of the person, which in this case, as the officer testified to, the weapon was outside of his reach. He specifically testified to that at trial, that the weapon was outside of his reach. Basically, it was in a position. They were in a U-Haul, so it's a larger vehicle. And with the position of the weapon, with it being by the passenger door and within the hard-sided case, that's just an extra step that would have to be taken for the appellant to have any control over the firearm.
How do you square that with the Goodwin case where the gun was in a locked glove box?
I think the difference there is that generally in a normal vehicle, a glove compartment is going to be within the reach of the driver. All he has to do is reach over and get the firearm out.
Except that it's locked.
That does add another step to it. But I think in this case it's different that basically to get into, with a locked glove compartment, you can have this key separate from the ignition key. Unlock the box just by reaching over and locking it. Firearm out. In this case, just from the position of the firearm, basically Mr. Sen would have had to pull over, unbuckle his seatbelt, slide all the way over, retrieve the firearm from where it was inside the case, and then make the firearm ready to fire. So there's multiple steps that he would have had to take, and it doesn't make that firearm what can be considered an immediate use situation.
So, counsel, is it a factual issue that has to be determined on a case-by-case basis?
I believe it is. I think most juries are going to have a pretty good idea of what they want to decide when it comes to this. But I think this jury, I think they stretched it. I think when you look at it fact-by-fact, in a case-by-case basis, every case, of course, is going to be a little bit different, but you'll see a lot of them that are the same. Generally, handguns are concealed under the seat in the glove compartment. And things like that, but
are some of the other factors of the size of the driver and the size of the vehicle? And the location of where the gun is located in comparison to where the driver is and what the reach is of the driver? Are those all considerations that they have to consider?
I think that would be. Obviously, when you have a pickup truck that just has a front seat and no back seat, it's going to be different than, say, an SUV where you have a firearm all the way in the back. Obviously, that's going to be something the jury will look at and be able to decide. But again, I think with the situation here, the vehicle was large enough, and I think actually showed at trial that it wasn't in a position that could be reached by the defendant. And again, the officer did testify to that at trial, that it was outside of his reach.
How does the trial court give an instruction to the jury to consider those aspects?
Well, that's where, when I was looking outside of Nebraska to get a kind of an idea of what other states have done. Starting in Illinois in 1926, there's case law from there, People versus Nemeth, where they just basically came out, the Illinois Supreme Court said that about a person, for a firearm considered to be about a person, it must be in such proximity to the accused as to be within his and under his control. And that's pretty much the control case that follows through all the way up to, even all the way up to in Colorado in 1976, they basically used the same reason that it has to be sufficiently close to a person and be readily or immediately used. I think that's kind of where we're trying to go with this.
So you're not arguing here that the jury wasn't instructed properly?
I think with the evidence that they had, an instruction would have been very helpful.
But you didn't raise that as an assignment of error. You didn't raise that that you had an issue with the jury instruction. You said the evidence was insufficient.
Right, and I believe the evidence was insufficient. I do believe the jury instruction would have helped, but...
Did you propose a jury instruction and offer it?
I did not. And that's why I didn't bring that up.
So if the jury was otherwise accurately instructed, they must have felt, based on what they heard and observed, that he had access to the gun within the vehicle.
I just believe that logically they went too far. It was...
But it isn't... So we always give discretion to the trier of fact because they're the ones that observe the witness and make a determination of credibility. And so how are we to second-guess what the jury did at this stage?
I just don't believe that the evidence was with the position that they had. I just don't see how they can make that reach to have a conviction.
And yet they found him not guilty on the other charges.
They did. And I think kind of the difference there is the other charges took place at a different location. And this stemmed from the top of the vehicle. I think they separated the two. And that's how they were able to come up with this. But I don't believe that it was a proper decision. But I think with some guidance, I think the jury would have easily been able to see that this is not it wasn't the facts that were necessary for a conviction.
Do you recall what the jury instruction was?
It was just the standard jury instruction for carrying concealed weapons. There wasn't where the firearm would have been. One of the other issues that I was kind of worried about is if this verdict is allowed to stand, a jury is in the same situation. It needs to make it virtually possible to transport a firearm in Nebraska without being violating Section 2802. Basically, if you're a hunter and have a firearm encased in your vehicle, under the same circumstances that this jury found you guilty on, you could be found guilty of that when you're just going out deer hunting or pheasant hunting. So we would ask the court that they vacate the verdict in this case, remand this back to Richardson County with an appropriate jury instruction that would help the jury to define what on or about a person when we're looking at 502.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Love?
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, George Love on behalf of the Appalachian State of Nebraska in this case. The issue before the court is based on the standard of review is whether the evidence viewed most favorably to the state supports the conviction, and obviously we submit that it does based upon State v. Goodwin and those cases that I cited in brief. I want to point out to the court that everybody is focused on the carrying of the concealed weapon when the deputy stopped the truck. He was guilty of it when he drove onto the property, pulled the gun out, and Buckley testified the gun was in within easy reach.
Well, we don't have anything in the record to prove that the jury found that evidence to be credible. That he
don't have anything to prove they didn't.
Well, except that they didn't convict him of the other charges that were filed against him.
They convicted him of the concealed carry.
Right.
When he drove onto the property, the gun was in the truck. Got out of the truck, argument ensues, he goes back to the truck, Buckley testifies the gun was in within easy reach, fires a shot, misses, goes back to the truck, takes off, sheriff stops him, gun found.
Right, but I'm saying the jury didn't believe that testimony. They didn't convict him of that.
They didn't convict him of the charge of attempted murder, terroristic threats, et cetera, et cetera. For whatever reason that is, but the fact of the matter is that the facts show he had to be carrying a concealed weapon when he drove onto the property.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, concealed means concealed if it would have just been laying on his back seat in open, plain view.
Well, there's a case directly on point. Two guns, revolvers found on the back seat of a vehicle.
Right.
The defendant was found guilty and it was upheld by the Supreme Court that he was guilty of carrying a concealed weapon.
That's the Kennedy v. State case
I cited in brief.
Would your position be the same if the gun had been in the case in a trunk of a car?
Absolutely not. And I can't remember the name of it, but kicking it around this morning, there's a case, I think, where the Nebraska Supreme Court actually stated the concealed carry charge would not be upheld where, there, in fact, there was a gun in the trunk of a vehicle in a locked case.
So what's the test? Is it enough that it's in the cab of the vehicle? So what about the cases that deal with the language that require it to be in, quote, such close proximity to the driver as to be convenient of access and with immediate physical reach?
Close proximity within a vehicle is the cab of the vehicle.
And your authority for that is Goodwin?
Reason and Goodwin. Because if you're driving, I'll grant you, Your Honor, I understand where you're going with this, the idea that it's on the far side of a U-Haul truck in a box stuffed under some clothes. Well, is that really accessible? The answer is yes. Because he can always stop that truck and get the gun. It's not the idea that it's going to take me 1 second to retrieve it. In other words, it's on the seat right next to me. It's in proximity, and it's easily accessible.
So if he has the key, if it's in the trunk and he has the key to the trunk, why isn't it easily accessible in that situation?
Because you have, and I agree with counsel, you have to be able to transport it.
So what, this isn't just a possession. It's not like possession of a vehicle, of a firearm. It's carrying, which in my mind is something different than just possession.
Your Honor, I couldn't, as a personal matter, I was an advocate. I'm going to set my advocacy aside for a minute and say, I kind of agree with that idea. That's not what the Supreme Court has said in Goodwin and other cases. In other words, proximity they have found is enough. I think the idea concealed carry, personally, that the law should be, the legislature should modify that and say, it has to be on your person. Or, readily accessible is such a tough standard. in such proximity and unguarded or unlocked or something that would clarify the definition. But as we stand here today, that's not what's before this court. What's before this court is, could a rational trier of fact find that, based on the law, that the appellant was in carrying a concealed weapon? And the answer is yes.
See, the cases deal primarily with gun under the front seat, gun laying on the back seat. Goodwin's kind of an outlier because it's in the glove box. But all of those are situations where I can picture a driver sitting in the driver's seat and being able to reach up, reach back, reach under. This, there's no, well, before we finish that, there's no evidence, right, would you agree with me, that he could reach it, Sen could reach it from where he was sitting in the driver's seat?
I would agree that there's no evidence that he could reach it, but I would also posit there's no evidence he couldn't.
Except the sheriff's testimony. He testified he could not reach it from, the sheriff did testify to that. As best I recall. So, back to my other, the other cases that we can rely on for precedent are all those cases where you can just reach it from where you're, the driver can reach it from where they're sitting. This isn't that case.
I think it is. I think it is. If it's in proximity, guilty under the statute and the case law. That's the question before this court. Most favorably to the state, not to the defendant.
Counsel, if it's a factual issue, which I think we all agree that it is.
Yes.
Does it make a difference as to the type of vehicle?
I think that's a slippery slope, Your Honor.
I think it is, too. That's what's causing me stress. That's what I'm asking.
The answer is, I don't know. I suppose, you know, if you were in a Hummer or something, some huge semi-truck, I don't know, and it was clear across the cab, something like that, in a locked box, and there's no trunk. Put it in.
Does it make a difference as to the size and ability of the driver? Are they handicapped? Are those all factual issues that need to be considered?
Yes, I think they are, but I think you would have, I don't think the state's obligated to put on that type of evidence in terms of, let's measure his arm length, let's measure the seat, let's measure the distance from the seat to the gun. I don't think that's what's required. What's required is proximity. And there's no question the gun is in proximity. That's the end of it on the standard of review. So we would ask that you affirm the verdict.
Anything else?
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leth. How much time?
Your Honor, I would just say that if we're going to expand the what's considered, if we're going to expand this to the entire passenger compartment of the vehicle, I don't think that's for anyone to be able to even transport a firearm in Nebraska. If the entirety of the passenger area of the vehicle is considered within reach or within proximity of the person driving, even if you have a firearm in a case in the back seat, that would be considered carrying a concealed weapon under these circumstances. And I just don't see that being what the legislature is saying.
After the Goodwin case came out, couldn't the legislature have amended the statute to reflect, a locked glove box?
They definitely could have. But I don't think they probably had any incentive from any other parties to do that. I think they probably
the department is reasonable. Counsel, I just want to make sure I understand your position. In the Goodwin case, the court said the fact that the glove compartment was locked when the officers searched the automobile is of no moment. The defendant was in complete control of the situation and the key at his immediate command. Whether the compartment was locked or unlocked was a matter of the defendant's choice. In this case, the gun is in a location where, again, it would be his choice as to where it was. That's a concern. And then the presence of the defendant's revolver within easy reach was clearly on or about his person. And in this case, it was not within easy reach. So which one of those two scenarios do you go with?
Your Honor, I think in this case, there was no other place you could put that vehicle. It was a U-Haul vehicle, and you just have to cab. And that was as far away as you could get it, unless you left it unsecured in the back of the U-Haul, which you didn't want to do. I think as long as it's outside of the reach, whether or not it's in a locked glove box or not, if it's outside the reach, that's what we should be looking at. If it's within reach, it gives him control of that weapon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is submitted. Counsel, you're excused. Our next case is Stelic versus Rakosnik.